you are new here, welcome to Jamestown Harbor today. Glad that you've decided to join us on this rainy day. I think many of you, when I was out in the lobby and it was like 9:57, I was like, I bet we're playing that fun game of how close to service start is the rain going to like let up so we can get in. So glad that you finally made it in here. Hope you got some coffee on your way in. My name is Chris. I'm the lead pastor here at Jamestown Harbor. It is good to be with you all this morning. If you are joining us for the first time, a couple things just about who we are that I just want you to know. First of all, like Abby said, we believe that God has called us into our community to be a church that helps people find their way back to God. Whether your story is someone who maybe you felt distant from God for a long time, or you feel really close, we believe that there is always more closeness that we can have with God. And so we are grateful for this opportunity to be able to pour into you in the ways that we do. And our series that we're in, this is our second week in our series called Dear Neighbor, because we have this vision statement of what we want to do in our community, but we always have to ask that question of how do we then do that? How do we make this vision of helping people find our way back to God be our reality week to week? And so we just kind of, we got together and thought about this series and said, what if we were to kind of put this together, think about our six core values, and if we were to, you know, say, write a letter to our neighbors, starting with Dear Neighbor, what is it that we would want them to know about who we are as a church? And so last week, we talked about our first two core values, which were being outsider-focused, and what we mean by that is just being a church that focuses on people that are not a part of our community yet, no matter who they are or where they are on their journey with God. We believe that God wants them to be a part of a community like this, and so we are going to be focused on figuring out who those people are, and in turn, being joyfully invitational, which was our second core value we looked at last week. We want to be people that joyfully invite people to this community, into a relationship with Jesus, whatever that might look like. We want to be outsider focused and filled with joy. And we looked at the story of Zacchaeus, a story that many of us have probably heard maybe 100 times at this point in our life, whether it was with a flannel graph back in the day or VeggieTales or YouTube videos, like wherever it was, you've probably heard that story before. And we saw how Jesus did that with Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus was somebody who nobody really wanted to be around because he was a chief tax collector, and there was a whole bunch of baggage with that. But Jesus saw him for who he was and did not care, and joyfully and invited him into a relationship with him. And so this week, the two core values that we're going to focus on kind of take us from like being invitational and out in our communities to a little bit more like, what do we do as a community to help ourselves and help those that are here continue to grow closer to God? And those are through two things. One is through discipling relationships. We believe that being in intentional relationships with each other, where we are focused on God, where we have conversations both filled with grace and truth, matter a lot in our own growth. And so when we say discipling relationships, we mean that we take our next steps back to God together. The other thing that we deeply value is we believe that that can happen through us sharing our authentic stories. Each of us has been places in life that has gotten us to this place. And God has worked some pretty incredible things in our lives, whether big or small or somewhere in between. And we believe that sharing our stories matters and helps spur us on to another level of relationship with Jesus. And so this morning, what I want to do is a couple things. I want to help us kind of figure out where we are at in our own discipleship journey. And so I've created a little bit of a graph behind me on the screen. I also found a fun button that had transitions in our Pro Presenter like stuff this week. So you get to bear with me as I had some fun. So this is what I would call our discipled and authentic scale, kind of trying to figure out like where are we as individuals on the spectrum of are we being discipled and are we somebody who is authentically sharing our story? So there's 5 categories. We'll start on the left side. My guess is most of us probably fall somewhere in the middle, but the first category would be this. Maybe you find yourself in this season of life, somebody who is hidden and alone. What do I mean by that? A couple of characteristics. When we talk about hidden and alone, we talk about this reality that maybe you don't have a lot of close people in your life for a various different amount of reasons. Maybe relationships that you do have stay pretty casual, like you gather around the water cooler and you kind of share about the weekend, but like you don't give many details. There's not much follow-up around that. It's hard to be vulnerable for various different reasons. Maybe there's pain with that in the past. Maybe you feel lonely even while surrounded with people. You come to church, you work, you serve, you socialize without ever feeling truly known. And maybe you don't know necessarily who you might call in the midst of a crisis. Now, I don't know that many of us are in that category, but some of you may find yourself in that category, and that is okay. Our hope by the end today is that we can have the courage to take one step to the right on this spectrum. The next one would be connected and guarded. Maybe you find yourself in this category where you have some friends, you have a church community, or maybe even a small group. You're socially connected, but not deeply known. You share some parts of your life, but you maybe avoid the struggles, the doubts, the failures, the pain, like the icky parts of life. Maybe we just kind of keep those masked and hidden to ourselves because we don't want to deal with those things with other people. Maybe you think, I like these people a lot, but maybe the story that we tell ourselves, like, if we share that thing, then those people that maybe we're even slightly connected with won't want to be connected with us any longer. You may share prayer requests without sharing what's really happening underneath them. Like, you're kind of connected, but you're just really guarded about yourself. Now, this, I will say, between this category and the next one, if I'm not careful, is the one that I tend to operate most often in. When I was in seminary, and shortly afterwards, we had like a group of guys who had kind of gone through, and we had been pastors, and one of the things that we were focusing on was how do we know each other well so that we can kind of call each other out, spur each other on, continue growing in our faith. We went on a retreat when I was, late 20s with this group of guys, and one of the things that the instructor did when we were there is they kind of had us, like, there were a couple different groups that were there, they had us circle up. And kind of the prompt that they gave us a little bit of a runway, which was helpful. But what they said to us was, hey, here's what's going to happen tonight. It's like 10 o'clock in the morning. What we want to do is we want to get you together. And we want you to say to each other, just name like two characteristics that you really like about the other person. If you're like me, that's great. Like, you'd love to hear the good things about you, right? Like, we want to be built up in that way. Then the instructor went on to say, what I also want you to do is I want you to name two characteristics that might be hindering you. Maybe like a growth area or a weakness. However they wanted to word it, it was like the nice way of saying, like, let's just peel back the layers and share like who you really are so that everybody knows who you are. And let's just kind of like drag you through the mud a little bit, right? Like, let's make you feel really exposed. So we went and did this. We came up with our list for like the eight guys that were in there or whatever. And I came back and started going around the room. There was one guy who was like, hey, we like this about you. We like this about you. Like, there's not much that I don't like about you. I was like, perfect. Great. That's excellent. Like, right? Like, I'm doing my job, right? I don't have any weaknesses. Awesome. Second guy, same thing. Third guy. And then it came to a friend of mine, Andrew, who what he said to me has stuck with me for years. Said two things that he liked about me. And then what he said, he's like, Chris, I've been listening to the other guys and I've been reflecting on my time with you. And I think you don't want us to know the growth areas. Like, I just don't know that I know enough about you in order to be able to speak into your life in a meaningful way other than the things that we like about you. And I think what I realized in that moment is the way in which I had grown up was, hey, we want to be seen a specific way. We want to act a specific way. And that includes not letting other people see where you might have pains or weaknesses or struggles in your own life, because then people will see you differently. This is often how I operate, is in this connected and guarded area, or the next one, which would be known but like inconsistent, right? Like, you're pretty known by the people that are around you. You have one or two people that you can trust and be honest with. You have meaningful friendships. You sometimes share hard things, but you may not fully share what's going on in your life. You may share authentic stories occasionally, but usually you like hearing other people's authentic stories more than sharing your own because it's a little bit painful. Sometimes you show up to things, sometimes you don't. You might think that there are people who know me, but we don't regularly push each other towards Jesus. Like, maybe it's just sharing. It's not necessarily a growth thing. Maybe you find yourself in the next category, the intentionally known category. This is somebody that maybe you find yourself here where you like sharing your story with other people. You regularly ask real questions. You talk honestly about the victories, the struggles, the hardships in your own life. You regularly share what you're struggling with. You don't feel pressure to pretend that everything is okay when it's not. Maybe you experience both encouragement and loving challenge in these relationships. But the thing that kind of holds back, I would say all of this is true for the last category, which is known, growing, and multiplying. The thing that's different about that category and this one is oftentimes the intentionally known, we are more fed into than we do helping feed other people. Right? If we're in that last category, which some of you probably are, maybe you have intentional relationships where you go and you invite them out to coffee, or you intentionally follow up about the prayer requests that were asked for you to pray for, or you heard about this thing that was happening in their life, not like behind the scenes in kind of a gossiping sort of way, but you step in and you ask them out to coffee, like, hey, can we go out for coffee? Can we talk? I would love to walk alongside you in this and share how I see Jesus in your life, right? Hold on to these five categories, because I think we find ourselves somewhere in there. We'll revisit this at the end, but I want to share a story this morning of a woman who found herself probably on the far left side, somewhere over there of this category, and through a discipling relationship with Jesus, she was able to share her authentic story that changed a whole community for the better. So if you have a Bible with me, or if you have a Bible, turn with me to the book of John. John chapter 4 is where we're going to be this morning. This is the story of the woman at the well. Again, this is a story that you've probably heard quite a few times at this point. My hope is, again, though, that we can look at it with a little bit of a different lens, maybe find ourselves in this story a little bit this morning, and maybe hear a little bit about what Jesus is trying to say to our own hearts in this moment. Here's how the story goes. John chapter 4, starting in verse 7. What we're going to see here is that Jesus knows her story really well and still enters into it. So here's what it says. When a Samaritan woman came to draw water, Jesus said to her, "Will you give me a drink?" His disciples had gone into town to buy food. The Samaritan woman said to him, "You are a Jew and I am a Samaritan woman. How can you ask me for a drink? For Jews do not associate with Samaritans." Jesus answered her, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is that asks you for a drink, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water." "Sir," the woman said, "you have nothing to draw with and the well is deep. Where can you get this living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well and drank from it himself, as did also his sons and his livestock?" Jesus answered her, "Everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again. But whoever drinks the water that I give them will never thirst. Indeed, the water I give them will become in them a spring of water welling up into eternal life." The woman said to him, "Sir, give me this water so that I won't get thirsty and have to keep coming back here to draw water." And he told her, "Go, call your husband and come back." "I have no husband," she replied. Jesus said to her, "You are right when you say you have no husband. The fact is, you have had five husbands, and the man you now have is not your husband. What you have said is quite true." And stop there for a minute. Jesus begins the conversation with this woman with a simple request. He's thirsty. He's sitting at the edge of a well at the highest peak of the sun during the day, and he says, "I'm thirsty. Can you give me a drink of water?" It begins at a very surface level, right? Like, we do this all the time. My kids regularly come down from their room, like at night or during the day, and they say, "Dad, I'm thirsty. Like, can I have a drink of water?" This is a natural conversation starting point for us, right? But what Jesus does afterwards is he begins sharing something deeper about her life. The conversation goes on where she starts to talk about how she comes up here to get water. He says, "Hey, I have this living water." It starts to get a little bit deeper. She doesn't fully understand what's happening quite yet, but Jesus is making this turn to have us start having a deeper conversation with her. And it gets to the point where Jesus says to her, "Go and call your husband." She answers honestly. She says, "I have no husband." Jesus responds by telling her that she is right. Now, an important distinction about this portion of the story. Jesus never once says why she has had five husbands often what happens is we've heard the story and that she is like this promiscuous woman or somebody who just is unfaithful to her husband. The reality is we don't know that during this story, but there is some story that is being told about her. There's a story that the townspeople have labeled her as a woman who might be cursed or a woman who has had the five husbands. Like, this was not a badge of honor for her, regardless of how she got to this point. She had had stories told about her that she was a Samaritan, that she was a woman. She's got these two things going against her when talking with Jesus, that she's had five husbands and that she's currently with a man who is not her husband. All of these things give people a piece of her story. To the point where she has to come during the middle of the day, the hottest point of the day, after all of the other women had come much earlier in the day. Clearly, she did not belong there. And so she found herself here at this moment, and Jesus is entering into it with her. We often do this with people in our own lives when we hear different parts of their story. We often will take one chapter of somebody's story, and we will make this the title of their whole life. Psychologists have studied this phenomenon for as long as psychology has been around. And one guy in particular, his name is Solomon Osh. I've got a sweet picture of Solomon. Someday I hope to have a painting of me with, like, I've got the like top of the hair going that way. Maybe I'll just grow it out and get some sweet circular glasses once my insurance comes back up and I have money for frames again. But maybe we'll do that. He had a paper written in 1946. So think back all the way to 1946. And he wrote a paper called Forming Impressions of Personality. It's 33 pages. I will tell you that I did not read all of it. I did like the good like school skimming aspect of it. But it's got really cool like hand-drawn graphs before like computers were around and stuff. And I find what he states fascinating about what we do with really complex individuals with their stories. He says this. He says, we look at a person and immediately a certain impression of his or her character forms itself in us. It's a glance, a few spoken words are sufficient to tell us a story about a highly complex matter. We know that such impressions form with remarkable rapidity and with great ease. The rest of his paper will go on to say that we continue to encounter incredibly complicated human beings. We may only receive various bits of information about who they are. We don't experience someone as a random collection of traits because we organize them into categories that most make sense to give us an overall picture of their character. And Osh will go on to note that he says that it can be incredibly difficult to forget our picture of a person once that picture was formed. Well, this may be our MO of how we operate. When we meet somebody and we hear their story, we begin to form who they are and why they are the way that they are. What we experience Jesus doing is Jesus hears all of these things. He knows her story, and yet he still wants to enter into a discipling relationship with her. Here's what the story continues to say. I find what Jesus does here just absolutely brilliant. Starting in verse 19, he says, "Sir," the woman said, "I can see that you are a prophet. Our ancestors worshipped on this mountain, but you Jews claim that this place where we must worship is in Jerusalem." "Woman," Jesus replied, "believe me, a time is coming when you will worship the Father neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem. You Samaritans worship what you do not know. We worship what we do know, for salvation is from the Jews. Yet, a time is coming and has now come when the true worshipers will worship the Father in the Spirit and in truth, for they are the kind of worshipers the Father seeks. God is Spirit, and his worshipers must worship in spirit and in truth." The woman said, "I know that the Messiah, called the Christ, is coming. And when he comes, he will explain all of these things to us." And then Jesus declared, "I, the one speaking to you, I am he." Jesus does a beautiful job of entering into relationship with her. He doesn't just know her story and think that that's really cool and see her as a Samaritan woman, thank you for the water, and leaves. He sees a deep-seated desire in her to belong, and he stays in conversation with her. He does all of the things that he shouldn't have done. He crossed all of the social boundaries. He crossed all of the ethnic boundaries. He crossed all of the gender boundaries in order to stay in relationship with her because he saw the need that she had in her life. And he asks her questions and allows the conversation to unfold in order to start discipling her towards him. In turn, she asks some pretty incredibly difficult questions for her to ask. And Jesus gives her both what is required in a discipling relationship, both grace. He doesn't sidestep the place that she's been and the things that have happened potentially, but enters in with the truth that I can give you living water regardless. He creates space for honesty without withdrawing from the relationship with her. Because what Jesus realizes is that discipling relationships require both closeness and they require truth. Jesus didn't just know her story. He stays close enough to help rewrite her story in a beautiful way. And so Jesus knows her story. Jesus enters into relationship with her. And what ends up happening in a really beautiful way is Jesus changes her story. We're going to continue in verse 27. It says, just then his disciples returned and were surprised to find him talking with a woman. But no one asked, what do you want or why are you talking with her? Then leaving her water jar, the woman went back to town and said to the people, come and see a man who told me everything that I did. Could this man be the Messiah, the one we've been waiting for? They came out of the town and made their way towards him. Jesus, because he stayed in relationship with her, because he didn't view her as just these one-off stories or making all of these stories around being at the well and drawing water in the heat of the day and having five husbands for whatever various reasons, didn't form this story of shame that we so often do around people that have troubled pasts. What he enters in with is he says, I, the one who am speaking to you, I am him. He reveals the truth about who he is, and her story radically changes to be one about, hey, this is who I was. This is where I've been in life. And Jesus did not care about any of that. The shame that she experienced, probably around who she would have been, that defining moment of her life no longer was simply what had happened to her, but it was what, or what she had done. It was that Jesus said to her, I met the Messiah and her life changed dramatically. What Jesus does is absolutely incredible for this woman. Because I think for so many of us, we live lives like her, where we have these situations in our life where we say, like, if people really knew that about me, if I was a little bit vulnerable in this moment, like, I don't know if they might see me differently, even just a little bit. Maybe I'll lose some credibility at work or at my gym or on my kids' sports team, like with other coaches. Like, I might lose credibility in some way, shape, or form because of this. Shame is such a powerful thing in our life. You may remember the book that came out a couple years ago. It was incredibly popular. She also has a TED talk about this. Brené Brown, maybe you've heard this name before. She has a book called Daring Greatly, which is all about, like, how do we share in a space and in a world that doesn't want us to be vulnerable. She's just got a brilliant quote about shame and how it works in our lives. And it goes like this. She says, knowing what I do now, I think about shame and worthiness in this way. It's the album, not the picture. If you imagine opening up a photo album and many of the pages are full 8x10 photos of shaming events, you'll close that album and you'll walk away thinking, shame defines that story. But if, on the other hand, you open the album and you see a few small photos of shame experiences, but each one is surrounded by pictures of worthiness, of hope, of struggle, of resilience, of courage, of failure, success, and vulnerability, the shame experiences are only a part of the larger story and they don't define the whole album. What Jesus does for this woman is he says, yes, there are these moments that you are probably not proud of, whatever they may be, but he gives her a story that is now her new center, that was different than it had been for most of her life. He puts all of those things into the proper perspective when he says to her that he is the Messiah. Her five husbands are still a part of her story, but they don't define her story. They don't define who she was. Her identity is no longer controlled by the labels other people might have given to her. What Jesus does is he does not pretend that the old chapters never happened. He doesn't just say like, I'm going to just brush past those things. He acknowledges that there were things that had happened in her past. And so he doesn't just simply pretend that the old chapters never happened. He begins writing something new through her. He gives her a new story. She was vulnerable enough that Jesus gives her this new sort of authentic story that then she can go and tell, and it helps other people meet Jesus. This story that is now her new one didn't just sit with her. She had to go out and tell other people about how Jesus had changed her life. This is what she says in verse 39. What happens is just incredible. It says, many of the Samaritans from that town believed in him because of the woman's testimony. He told me everything I ever did. This is what she goes back and tells him. He's told me everything I ever did. And so when the Samaritans came to him, they urged him to stay with them. And he stayed for 2 days. And because of his words, many more became believers. They went back and they said to the woman, we no longer believe you because of what you said alone. Now we have heard for ourselves, and we know that this man really is the Savior of the world. Her invitation to people, to the Samaritans, because of her new story, is simply come and see a man who told me everything I ever did. Come and see this man that didn't care about my past, but saw it as a part of my larger story and radically changed my life. And I want you to know about him. Come and see what he has done in my life. Her authentic story becomes the bridge that leads other people to Jesus. Quite frankly, probably other people that also had moments of shame in their life or things that they were not proud of. They now wanted to come and see Jesus because she said, come and meet the one who changed my entire life. Her authentic story was not about making her look impressive. You may have heard stories of people when they share about struggles in their past, almost wearing it as like a badge of honor about like how they did it and how they got out of it. What she does is none of that. She has those moments, but what she does with her story that is drastically different is she says, it's not about what I did, but come and see the one who made a dramatic change in my life. Come and see the one who said he was the Messiah. And because of that, John tells us that many other Samaritans, many other neighbors, many other people that they lived in community with had their lives radically changed as well. Not just because of her story, although that was the bridge that got them there. But when he stayed there for 2 days, he shared who he was with these other individuals. And they said, it's not just because of what you shared anymore that we believe that this man is the Messiah. But he now, because of your testimony and helping us meet him, we now see for ourselves who Jesus really is. This goal of being in discipling relationships and helping create and be authentic with our story, it's not just that people would be impressed with us, but that these people that we know would encounter Jesus for themselves. So the question that I always ask when putting together sermons, it's like, sweet, that's awesome. So what? What do we do with this? What do we do to help make this a part of our own life so that it matters deeply to us? I have a few thoughts and then a challenge for us. First thought is this. Your story does not have to be dramatic to be powerful. It just has to be honest. You don't have to have every question answered before you start to share your story or enter into a discipling relationship with others. You don't have to have it all figured out. You don't need to be perfect. In fact, you can continue to have unfinished parts of your life. I would argue that that is what Jesus and where Jesus shows up most in our life when we give our unfinished parts of our life over to him and share them with somebody else. Because sometimes the most important testimony that we can have is simply is this is who I was. This is where I met Jesus. This is where I still need Jesus to meet me in my life. But I know that Jesus is going to guide me into a beautiful future. And this is what he's doing in me now. So that's thought number one. Your story does not have to be dramatic to be powerful. It just has to be honest. And the second thing is authenticity gives other people permission to be honest too. probably had moments in your life where you've shared something about your life and then you get that phrase back like, yeah, me too. Like I've experienced that before, right? Like there are certain things in my life that I've shared with people where it's like, yeah, like me too. Like we've experienced that before and you're not alone in that sort of thing. And like, let me help guide you through that thing, right? Like it doesn't happen where we connect with each other all the time without first going first and sharing our authentic story, because authenticity gives other people permission to be honest too. Jesus didn't waste her story and he doesn't waste our story. And oftentimes when we share our story becomes an invitation, much like this woman, for other people to meet Jesus as well. And so authenticity gives other people permission to be honest too. Now I want to challenge you. I want you to think back to those five categories that we had of where we found ourselves on our spectrum. My challenge to you is to ask the question of what's one thing that I can do to move myself from the left side where I'm at a little bit further to the right. But I want to help you figure out where you're at. So I want to ask you these questions first. I want you to answer honestly, how known am I really? If you were to give yourself a grade and think about like, where do you find yourself? Do you find yourself having a lot of people? How well do you feel like you are known already? Who knows the real me? Who have I shared some pretty intimate things with? Who has permission to follow up with me about, or who has permission to help me follow Jesus? Do I have those people in my life or not? And am I helping anyone else follow Jesus in return? And the question would be then, where and how do you take a next step to go from one category, maybe slightly closer to the next, or maybe all the way into the next category? I want to give you some helpful hints, because I know sometimes we can ask these open-ended questions and then they're just always open-ended questions. So I want to give you some practical things. If you can find yourself in a category, maybe you can do one of these things this week. If you find yourself in the hidden and alone category, maybe your next step then is to pick one place to consistently show up. Let one person know something real about yourself. The next time someone trustworthy or that you deem trustworthy, potentially trustworthy, asks, how are you? Give them a slightly more honest answer. If you're not good, don't say good. See what happens. See where it goes. So if you're hidden and alone, take one next step and maybe that way. If you find yourself connected, but maybe a little bit guarded in your life, maybe identify one trustworthy person that could be your go-to from now on. Share something you normally keep guarded with yourself. And instead of saying, maybe pray for me, tell them what you actually need prayer for and be honest with them. Make that relationship with that person an ongoing relationship of somebody that you can trust. If you find yourself known, but inconsistent in those relationships, ask someone, could we start meeting regularly? Could we get together for coffee? And when you do, put it on the calendar. Talk with them about scripture. Talk with them and pray with them. Talk with them about struggles that you've had, victories that you've had, decisions that you have to make that maybe you're wrestling with or it's causing you anxiety, or where you've seen God working, and ask them maybe to say where they've seen God working in your life. But most importantly, give them permission to challenge you a little bit in your life. If you find yourself intentionally known, somebody who's really well connected, you have regular relationships, start sharing more about what God is doing in your life with other people. Maybe not just with that connected person, but somebody new, somebody that you feel like God is placing on your heart. Tell some unfinished stories, right? Not just the victories that happened 10 years ago. Like there's things that have happened in my life that I love to talk about. Like someday I'll probably share my story about 2009. You'll probably hear it in October and you'll be like, all right, he said he had a story that happened like 15 years ago about something that God did in his life. But don't just always share those stories about where God had shown up. Share those stories where maybe God is still working on you. Share those unfinished stories. And then ask that question, who might need to this kind of relationship that someone has given me? How might I start multiplying that? Who's somebody that I might be able to meet with on a regular basis for coffee before work? Or meet at the gym afterwards and after work and walk on the treadmill together and catch up on life? If you find yourself in the known and growing and multiplying category, my challenge for you is to keep multiplying it. It can be really easy for us just to have those people that we know and continue to pour into them, but invite someone else into the kind of relationship that has changed you. Help the person you're discipling maybe, challenge them to start to find a group of people that maybe they can disciple someone else as well, and keep telling stories that point people towards Jesus rather than towards ourselves or our accomplishment. And so the simple challenge for everyone is you don't need to jump from 1 to 5. In fact, that would probably be unhealthy in a lot of ways. We don't jump from 0 to 60 immediately in a car unless you have an awesome car. Then I want to ride in it at some point, right? But we don't often do that because it's not good. We don't go from sitting on the couch to a dead sprint often because that's how we tear Achilles tendons, right? Like, we don't do these sorts of things often. But my challenge for us is to simply take one step, one small step into a deeper discipling relationship where we might share our stories more authentically. And continue to ask yourself, what is one step that you can take to the right this week? Ultimately, I think if we start doing this sort of thing regularly, where we share our authentic stories, where we listen for how God is acting in our lives and putting people in our lives to share our stories with and to be in discipling relationships with each other, I think this story gives the beautiful ramifications that can happen from that. This woman met Jesus. He didn't care who she was or where she came from. He encouraged her to take a new step through the questions that she asked, and she found herself transformed in a beautiful way that she couldn't keep to herself, and then her whole community started to change. I think it's possible for us to do that in Jamestown. I think it's possible for us to do that in our workplaces. I think it's possible for us to do that in our friend groups. I think we just need the nudge, the little bit of courage to say, what is my next step into discipling relationships and to be a little bit more authentic? Would you pray with me? God, this morning we are incredibly grateful and for many of us humbled because of the way that you have shown up in our lives. The ways in which you have placed people in our lives in the past who have been honest with us. The ways in which our stories, which we once thought were filled with shame potentially, or maybe filled with not a lot of good things, or maybe a lack of direction, whatever it was. And then you showed up and gave us a new story. God, would you give us the courage this week to share that story with somebody that needs to hear it? In a moment where we feel your urging to say, hey, speak into this person's life, would you give us the courage to do that through sharing our authentic story? Would you help us to follow up with those people that are maybe close to us and invite them into a more intentional relationship where we get to pray together, we get to disciple each other, we get to talk about who you are and what you're up to in the unfinished, kind of unflattering parts of our life sometimes, so that we may be able to go and have another moment where you've shown up and you've created a new story in us. Would you give us the courage to take that next step forward this week in our life? God, we give all of these things over to you. We love you, and we'll talk to you soon. And everybody said, amen.